We started to learn Sefer Chassidim between Mincha Maariv in Shul. Well, so far we've done it three times and we've gotten just to a little bit of what his goal is in writing it. But hopefully today between Mincha Maariv we'll actually start on some of his specific practical suggestions for the person who wants to grow as a Chassid. But I thought it would be worthwhile to take some time to understand more about who Rabbi Yehuda Chassid was. And what his ideas are, what the framework is. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid himself is extremely important for understanding the development of Ashkenazi Judaism. Right? We spent a month on Sephardi Judaism. It's worth spending a little bit of time to understand Ashkenazi Judaism. Remember that Ashkenazi Judaism starts with migration from Italy to Germany. So he is a very important part of that line that establishes Ashkenazi Judaism in Germany. If you remember, at one point in a shir between Mincha Maariv, we talked about the Clonimus line. I think it was when we were talking about Piyutim. So Rabbi Moshe ben Clonimus, sometime late 9th century, early 10th century, comes from Lucca, Italy. He's the author of Kol Mekadesh. He's the author of Menucha V'Simcha. He's the author of quite a few Piyutim. He goes from Italy to Germany, and he's the first one in that line who become the great founders of Ashkenazi Jewry in Judaism in Germany. So he is a great grandfather of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. It's not that many greats; it's like three or four. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's great grandfather was Rabbeinu Eliezer HaGadol, who was a student of Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom being basically the intellectual godfather of Ashkenazi Judaism. Rabbeinu Gershom had many, many Talmidim, but Rashi's three Rebbeim were all Talmidim of Rabbeinu Gershom. So he's somebody who we'll have to talk about also at some point. But my point is that only the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, his line comes from Talmidei Rabbeinu Gershom. His great-grandfather was Rabbeinu Yitzchak of Magenza, who was murdered by the Crusaders in the First Crusade. His grandfather was Rabbi Clonimus HaZaken of Magenza, who escaped the Crusades from Magenza, ran to Speyer. His father was Rabbeinu Shmuel HaChassid, who was a major mystic who wrote about tefillah. He was a paitan. He wrote commentaries to the Mechilta on the one hand and Meseches Tamid on the other hand. And that's one of the hallmarks of not just Rabbi Shmuel HaChassid, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and the general line that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid represented, which was that on the one hand, they were very strong in what we think of as traditional Torah, and on the other hand, they were poets, paitanim, they were mystics. It's a fascinating combination that you see with them. That's not exclusive to Ashkenaz, meaning Ramban was also a mystic and yet a posig and Befarish of the Gemara and so on. But somehow it feels like the balance is more towards mysticism when you talk about the Hasidei Ashkenaz. They were ascetics, as we're going to see, staying away from physical pleasure. They're not the Hasidim that you think of from the last couple of hundred years who, the stereotype is they're having a good time and singing and dancing and hugging everybody. Whether that's true of all modern Hasidim is also a question, but it's certainly not true of Hasidei Ashkenaz. That's not who they were, as we'll see. In Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's own generation, his brother is Rabbi Avram, who's the Rebbe of the Rokeach, a very important German commentator to the Torah, among other things, also a mystic. His sister was a woman by the name of Golda, who married Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. Yes, these are all right. We're going to get to years shortly, but I'll tell you, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is born in 1150. So you're talking 12th century into the 13th century. But his sister Golda marries Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. So Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan is popularly known because Rashi quotes him whenever he wants to say something fascinating and very different. But Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan was also the Rebbe of the Baal Hamor and the Raifid. So it's very funny. Like if you think of Rashi, let's say, on the Nesiim, the gifts that the Nesiim brought when they dedicated the Mishkan and Parshas Naso. So Rashi goes through them in a very pshat level of what each of the gifts was, and then he goes over with Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan giving you gematrias and other explanations about the meaning of the Kaf Echad that's filled with Ketores and all of that. And at the same time, he's the Rebbe of the Baal Hamor and the Raivid, these very hardcore Rishonim on the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's own Talmidim include the Or Zarua, Rabbi Yitzchak Or Zarua, the Rokeach we mentioned, the Smag, one of the big collectors of the 613 mitzvos, Rabbeinu Baruch of Magensa, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Klonimus, Chachamim elsewhere wrote away to him with questions. See, he's a real shaper of Ashkenazi Chasidus, the Chasidei Ashkenaz, who in turn produced the Minhagim, Tefillah, and Halacha of Ashkenazi Jewry. All of this is why he's important historically. But in terms of why he's important for us personally and why it's worth learning Sefer Chasidim, I bring you source number one. I did some of this between Mincha Maariv, I think, the first day that I was quoting him. He's talking about why he's writing the Sefer Chasidim, and he says, "V'nichtav liyirei Hashem ulchoshevei Shemo." This book is written for those who revere Hashem, who are in awe of Hashem, and those who contemplate His name. Pasuk. He didn't coin the term. Ki chassid asher libo chafetz be'ahavas boro lasos kol ritzono. Because you have a chassid who wants to love Hashem. He wants to do everything Hashem wants. Ve'eino yodea lasuma lev advarim kulam. But he doesn't know how to put into his heart all the things that Hashem wants. U'me'ezet davar tzerich lihizaher. What he should stay away from. Ve'eich lahamik lasos ritzon boro. And how to go in depth to fulfill what Hashem wants. Lefisha mia tu alavavos, because we're not as smart as we used to be. We don't know as much as we once did. Ulefisha yesh chasid shemesim harbe devar malibo. V'yesh chasidim shaosin ma'at. There are chasidim who do a lot, and there are chasidim who do less. V'ilu ha'yodeya umevim b'divri chasidus ha'yose harbe ma'od me'osin chasidim ha'osin harbe. If he knew more, he would do more than all the chasidim who do a lot. He would overachieve. But he doesn't know anything. L'kach nichtav sefer chasidim man yiru bo yirei Hashem v'chol ha'shavim leboram b'leiv shalem. So he says, he wrote sefer chasidim so that those who revere Hashem, those who want to return to Hashem with a whole heart, I'm going to talk about the returning to Hashem piece in a bit, v'yedu v'yavinu ma sha'aleim lasos u'me'eza davar tzvichin li'izahir. They'll know what to do, and they will know what not to do. And that's why this is valuable, because it provides guidance for Jews who want to know, how do I do what Hashem wants me to do? I don't want to just have a checklist. I know I'm not supposed to eat treif. I know I'm not supposed to wear shatneys. I know I'm supposed to say Kriya Shema by a certain time in the morning. I want to have a relationship with Hashem. How do I do that? Sefer Chasidim is here to save the day. It's here to tell you what to do. Now, there are all sorts of stories about Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. You know the classic story about Rashi's mother when she was pregnant with him? Right, where there's a wagon coming down the road out of control and it's going to run her over, and then the wall caves in to make a space for her. So they also tell that story about Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's mother, when she was pregnant with him. He's born, as I said, in the year 1150, whether with an adventure on the road or not. It is told that he had zero background in learning. Even though his father was Rabbi Shmuel HaChassid, he had zero interest, did not want to learn. He was wild. He used to play with bows and arrows, like that was his thing. And he's 18 years old, having grown up, not just like to bar mitzvah, but he's 18 years old and still doing this. And his father's talmidim said, maybe we should do something. And his father tests him using a Shem Hashem. What exactly that means, I do not know. There's a book called Chasidim HaRishonim, which I brought you in number two, which tells this story. If you look, actually, you can see it. The end of the second line in the Hebrew, V'kasu HaTalmidim, the beginning of the third line in the English. V'kasu HaTalmidim Me'od, the students were very upset. V'omer l'Rabbeinu Shmuel, Ata ve'avicha ve'avos avicha kulam hayisem gedolim. You come from a line of Gedolim. Ve'ata tigadal bin chalios pera adam v'umnuso listim. You're going to raise your kid that he should be a wild man, that he should go into banditry, this kid with a bow and arrow. Ve'hizkir Rabbeinu Shmuel shem echad. So Rabbeinu Shmuel invoked a name of Hashem, by which he does not mean Elokeinu. He means one of the mystical names of Hashem. Ve'nismale beis hamedrash kulo ora. The whole base medrash was filled with light. Rabbeinu Avram Nasan Einav Lamata Bekarka. Rabbeinu Avram, who was Rabbi Yehuda Chassid's brother, looked down. He couldn't look with all the light that was there. V'Rabbi Yehuda Chassid lo kam v'lo zah. And Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid did not rise, did not tremble. He was okay with it. Okay with it, not meaning he was completely insensitive to it and therefore it had no meaning for him, but he was able to bear it. He was able to tolerate this this spiritually pure light.
When is this account recorded?
So Hasidim Rishonim is a late thing. It's not something early. I don't know how early the story actually shows up. You can find Hasidim Rishonim on the DOT website. They actually print this. You want to say? Okay. So his father, Rabbi Shmuel HaChassid, entrusted him with special papers that had on it the Shem Hashem. And again, we're talking the mystical names of Hashem, the 72 letters, that kind of thing. There's actually a story which the Maharshal tells in 16th century Poland in source number 3 about how Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid had warned his wife, don't go near this box when you're in Nida. And she did at some point, and she forgot, and she touched the box, and the result of it was that he went into Galus. In order to atone for it, he went into Galus. He was living in Speyer, and he went to Regensburg instead, and he helped build up the community there before finally returning into Speyer. He went into Galus to atone for this. His practices, like I said, are not your practices that people think of with Hasidim. One example of it, brought in his name in the Shulchan Aruch, was that he fasted on Shabbos. Right? We don't usually think of fasting on Shabbos. We know that the Gemara brings the possibility if somebody has a frightening dream and they're really upset and worried it's going to come true, there's a possibility they could fast on Shabbos because that's their own egg. That's how they'll enjoy the day. They won't enjoy the day if you force them to eat a seuda, so therefore they're allowed to fast on Shabbos, and then they have to fast on Sunday to atone for the fact that they fasted on Shabbos. So the Shulchan Aruch, in source number 4, brings this. Who calls him a Navi?
The Marshal.
Oh, the Marshal in number 3. Yes, Kadosh V'Navi, that's correct. And you find statements like that. The introduction here to this edition of the Sefer Hasidim brings somebody, I forget who it was, who said, had he lived in the times of the Amoraim, he would have been an Amora. Had he lived in the times of the Tanaim, he would have been a Tana. Had he lived in the times of the Nevi'im, he would have been a Navi. That's the way they look at Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Adam ha-mis'ane b'chol yom, a person who did not have a dream, a person who fasts every day, v'achila b'shabbos tsar hulo, it's painful for him to eat on Shabbos, mibnei shinoi veses, physically, because he's used to not eating. Yesh omrim shiro kama chasidim v'anche maise shehisanu b'shabbos mitam zeh, v'chein omru shekach haya osa Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid zal. They say that there were chasidim who did this, and Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid did this. Now, what's interesting to me in particular is that this is not the Rama writing. This is Rabbi Yosef Karo writing. So, in the land of the Sfardim, they are looking at Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid as a model, and Rabbi Yosef Karo does not stam quote people in the Shulchan Aruch. It's usually, this is what we do. And he specifically mentions that he heard Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid did this. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wrote Sfarim on Halacha.
Do we have names of his prominent followers that were actually Hasidim besides Rabbi Oskin?
Not that I know of. That doesn't mean we don't, but not that I know of. A lot of what he wrote, which theoretically may have included names also, we don't know, but has only come to light in terms of being published in recent generations. So, for example, his Sifrei Halacha, we don't have them being published, when they start publishing Sfarim in the 15th century, 16th century. They've been in manuscript, and they've only been published in recent years. His Perush on Chumash, he has a Perush on Sefer Iyov. But again, not popularly published for a long time. He wrote Gematrias. He wrote a commentary to the Sefer Yetzirah, which is supposed to be about how you can, create life, among other things. He wrote on various mystical works. The Sefer Hasidim itself is actually a collection from various manuscripts, which is why if you pick up one volume of the Sefer Hasidim, you will find it in one order. You pick up another volume of the Sefer Hasidim, things are out of order. Someone quotes you something and says, oh, it's in Sefer Hasidim, Simen Tav Resh. You look in yours and it's not there. You have to go hunting for where it is. It's frustrating because in Toronto, there was a major, major Talmud Chacham by the name of Rav Avram Price. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was the one, among other crazy things that he did. He did these remarkable things. But he was responsible for saving many Talmidei Chachamim, or people who became Talmidei Chachamim, from Europe during the war. He had them brought over. I believe Rav Gedalia Felder was a Talmud of his. So Rav Ram Price wrote Perushim on the Smag and on the Sefer Hasidim. So there is a group of his Talmidim in Toronto who are dedicated to furthering his Torah, and so they published it, and I would get to give a shiur for them at one point, and I wanted to give from his Sefer Hasidim Torah, but it's very hard to match up what he's talking about with your Sefer Hasidim. That's a long way of saying that. They say about him that he spoke with Eliyahu HaNavi. Interestingly, Anam Zmiros, which we know is considered Kodesh Kadashim, is ascribed to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He's supposed to be the author of Anam Zmiros. In his later life, he became Rosh Yeshiva in Regensburg. And he passes away on Shabbos Zachor in the year 1217. There are all sorts of stories about his death. I did write when Chassidim Rishonim was published. It was published in the 19th century, late 19th century Germany. So it's a relatively recent thing. One of the most famous things about Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is his tzava'a, his ethical will. You've heard of the tzava'a Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid? I think I mentioned it maybe one day between Melchem Ma'ariv. It's a problematic work. It was mentioned by early leaders of Ashkenaz, like the Trumas Hadeshin, for example, great Rav in Austria in the 14th, 15th century. It was mentioned as a reliable source of halacha. His tzava'a, his ethical will, includes various things that he says you should do or that you should not do. It's best known for the ban on marrying somebody with the same name as your parent. If you've heard of that practice of not marrying somebody like that, or at least changing the name of one of the parties, that's found in his tzava'a. The problem with the tzava'a is that it includes bans on practices that we know existed in the time of the Gemara and were even considered good things to do. So, for example, he says you're not supposed to marry your niece. The Gemara talks about that in a very praiseworthy way. It's an act of chesed. Remember, going back to a time of polygamy, the Gemara says it's very, it's a positive thing to do. If your niece is not able to support herself and is not able to get married, then you should take her in. And that was how you would take her in. But he says, no, you're not supposed to marry your niece. Various things. Marrying a widow, which we, again, normally think of as a good thing to do. He says, no, one is not supposed to do it. And that creates all sorts of problems. Like, what do you mean? What do we do with that? So three different approaches. One approach is the approach of the Chasam Sofer, which I brought you in number 5, in which he says, don't worry about the things that are there. He says, Tov yoser shalalachos shledvarim ha'elu. Don't worry about the things that you see in the tzava. Things like them. Klal devarim shalo huzgru b'shasu poskim. Things that are not found in the Gemara. They're not found in the poskim. V'lo Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid chasum alei. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's name is not signed on them. Now, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid did not sign his manuscripts, so I don't know if he means that literally, not signed on them. But basically, the Chasam Sofer's allegation is that it's not his. Correct? There's stuff in there that is not actually from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Well, that's one answer to the problem. The Maharam Minsk gave another answer, which was that some of these things that are in there just didn't spread and get accepted. They may have been in the Tzava, but they didn't become popular practice. These aren't halacha. And the Noda B'Yehuda gave what I think is the best known answer in source number 6, which is to say this was Lazaro Acharav Tziva Ladore Doros. These were practices that he said his descendants should keep. Somehow, Beruach HaKodesh, he knew that this is the way they should do things, that they should not get married to such people. Like, that was his thing. It wasn't that everybody had to observe this. Not so.
The Zivugim would not be good.
Yeah. Whether the Almana, whether the one with the same name, whatever it was, this is not about what everybody should do. This was local for his family. That was all he was trying to do. And then people published it, and it became what everybody should do. So, the Chassidei Ashkenaz, this group that the principles of the Chassidei Ashkenaz, this group that he helps create, are pursuit of Chesed, pursuit of Yashrus, being very straight, shunning personal material gain. They're very against becoming wealthy, very against luxury, that sort of thing, inappropriate. Now, I don't know how hard it is to achieve that when you're living in 12th century Germany as a Jew, but nonetheless, that was a value for them. Very into Talmud Torah, but not only Talmud Torah as a mitzvah or even a practical means of understanding how to live as a Jew, but as a mystical act. When you learn Torah, you are reciting a form of the Shem Hashem. It's a mystical thing. He was very against Pilpul. He did not like the Pilpul-type analysis. He did not like people inventing Chidushim on the Gemara until they're ready to do so. He said, you have to be at a certain level in order to do it. He was very, very into, and this comes up over and over again in the Sefer Hasidim, martyrdom. Dying on Kiddush Hashem. And this was huge. Those who were there when I talked about Dona Gracia, I talked about this a little bit then. On the Sephardi side, the Rambam looms large. When he says to the Jews who are being compelled in Muslim lands to live as Muslims, to declare their loyalty to Islam, and the Rambam says, so you do whatever mitzvahs you can do until you can get out of the country. But keep on doing mitzvahs. Hashem values you, don't worry about it. Now, whether the Rambam would have said the same thing about Christianity is unknown, because he was writing to Jews in Muslim lands. But that became the doctrine of many Jews who lived in Christian Spain under the Inquisition, people who publicly adopted Christian identities and only privately continued to observe Judaism. Even though the Rambam did say, you have to get out of these lands as fast as you can, even at the expense of leaving behind all your money, leaving behind family, Rambam said, you have to get out of there. But what they took from the Rambam was this idea that you can publicly accept, you know, what they're telling you to accept, and privately continue to live as a Jew. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, his view dominates what you see in Ashkenaz. You see it in the Baalei HaTosfos, you see it in their Talmidim down through the generations. And his view was martyrdom is a goal. It's a goal to die on Kiddush Hashem. Like, he has a line where he says, he talks about why should people lose out if they didn't get the opportunity to die al Kiddush Hashem, but they would have if it had been given to them. That becomes his derech and the derech of his talmidim, and it's very big in various cases in the Sefer Hasidim. Interestingly, his Kabbalah was heavily influenced by Rav Sajigon. I don't know how the Shalshelet works, how that connection works, that he ends up with a Kabbalah of you know, Rav Sajigon, who was, of course, born in Egypt and, you know, going in Iraq. But somehow or other, that school of Kabbalah is found in him. So we didn't actually get to the sources on what his concept of a chassid is, and his pillars of Hasidus, which I brought you sources for on the sheet. I'll take a few minutes just, you know, I don't want to take anybody past 9:15, but just to flesh that a little bit, and you can see it on the sheet. First of all, he believes very heavily in the idea of living a life of tshuva. To him, a chassid is somebody who does tshuva to come back to Hashem. That's what it means to be a chassid. And I brought you, you already saw it in the piece that we saw from Sefer Hasidim, from the beginning of Sefer Hasidim, before we talk about Lo Shuvah Hashem, to return to God. It's in Sefer Hasidim Zayin as well, which is source number 7, go figure. When he talks about a person returning to Hashem, Yispala Yom Balayla Lefnei Borosh, Etzanu Midas Hadin, he has all of this about doing tshuva. So the Makor Chesed commentary on the Sefer Hasidim notes that this is problematic, because Rashi in the Gemara in Sukkah, in source number 8, says, Kol chassid havi chassid mei karo. He says the definition of being a chassid is somebody who is pious from the start. In order to be a chassid, you have to be pious from the start. He says, Kol chassid. So how can Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid say otherwise? But then he points out, there's a Gemara in Bava Kamma which supports this. Bava Kamma Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph says that, talks about somebody who swears falsely and then recants from it and becomes a chassid. And he also brings you the Gemara in Erevin, which I brought you here in source number 9, which describes Adam Arishon as a great chassid after the original Avera. So that supports Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid that no, a Baal Tshuva can be somebody who returns to Hashem. I don't know how much of this in Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was also about enabling the Jews who had done whatever they had done under pressure from the church to come back. I don't know if that figures into Sefer Hasidim. He does talk about them in the Sefer Hasidim, so it could be that that's what that's about. But what he says is, your goal ought to be to seek to fulfill Hashem's desire beyond that which is specified in the Torah, to transcend it. So if you look at number 11, the Sefer Hasidim Yud Aleph, he says, "V'zeh shoresh hachasidus." This is the root of being a chasid. "Shetzarech lasos lifnim mishuras hadin." To go beyond the line of the law. "B'chol davar," in every area. "Shenamar," as it says about Hashem, "v'chasid b'chol ma'asav." Hashem is a chasid in all of his actions. So that's what you should do. You should be looking to go above and beyond. That's what he wants. And he says the motivation for the Jew should be to be motivated by love of Hashem, as well as Yiras Hashem. But he has a unique definition of Yiras Hashem, and we'll conclude with that. He has a different way to look at Yiras Hashem. Usually, when we talk about Yiras Hashem, we talk about it in one of two ways. Either Yiras HaOnesh, I'm afraid of getting zapped if I do something wrong. Or, right, Yiras HaRomamus, you're in awe of, Hashem is so awesome, he's so amazing, and I want to do whatever it is that Hashem wants me to do. Neither of those is his model of Yira. In source number 12, he says, "Shoresh hachasidus Yira." The root of piety is this fear. What is this fear? "Kisha'adam mis'ave l'dvar hana'a va'ozev es yitzro m'nei yiras Hashem." When a person really wants something, but he says, "I'm not going to pursue it because of my Yira of Hashem." "V'lo she'yareh m'pnei pur'anuyos olam haba." Not that he's afraid he's going to suffer in the next world. "V'lo b'shvil hana'as ha'olam hazev olam haba." Not because Yiras Hashem will help me in this world. "Ela yareh pen lo yetamim be'avas habore." He is afraid that he will not be complete in his love of Hashem. He's afraid of falling short. He says, "I want to be close to Hashem. I want to love Hashem. And I'm worried that this activity is going to take me away from that." So he's setting a very high bar, realistically. And I would say, as he says in the beginning of the Sefer, this isn't for everybody. I could easily imagine somebody who is already dealing with anxiety, already dealing with neurosis, going too far in this kind of approach. It would be unhealthy. But what he's advising is, for those for whom it is healthy, to say, "I don't want to be distant from Hashem, and therefore I'm going to do whatever I can to go above and beyond in order to fulfill the Ritzon Hashem, whether that's in acts of chesed, whether that's in self-denial, whether that's general, if nimishu es adin, doing great things in private." Some of those things are in the sources that are on the rest of the sheets, if you want to look at it. Otherwise, we'll get to it, God willing, we're not going to finish Sefer Chassidim Tumei Chamar, it's a big book. But nonetheless, we'll hopefully get to gain some familiarity with it as we learn through it.
In which schools of thought was he most influential afterwards, given how otherwise extreme it might have been viewed?
Yeah. So it's interesting, because when you look at who his Talmidim were, you find him influential in people who are not talking about being extreme at all, people who are just straight parsha.
Right, I'm asking about the separate Hasidim side.
Right. Okay. So I think the immediate influence is really Hasidei Ashkenaz, emphasis under Hasidim of Ashkenaz. We don't necessarily see, let's say, the Rama bring a lot from the Sefer Hasidim directly. At the same time, I feel like when you get to the Balei Musar, which of course is much later, not all of them are much later, but the ones we're most familiar with and think of as the Balei Musar, they seem to be channeling him. They really seem to be channeling. When you look at someone like Mesilas Yesharim, right, where, Precious and things like that, like that's very much an ideal of the Sefer Hasidim. What I would need to look at, and I haven't looked at, is do they quote him verbatim? The school of thought is definitely there. Whether they actually say, "And so wrote Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid," is something I'd have to go back and check. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Shkayach. Thank you very much. Following up on a question from the end of the shir, I was asked about the influence of the Sefer Hasidim in later times. So I did a quick search of the Bar Ilan database and found Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid is heavily quoted in Orchos Tzadikim, which was anonymously written in the 15th century, the Shalah, in various writings in 16th century Prague, the Chida, who's 18th century Israel/Italy and other travels, The Peleioites, Rabbi Elazar Papo, which is 18th, 19th century Ottoman Empire, I think today Bosnia, and the Chafetz Chaim in late 19th, early 20th century Poland. There are other references also, but those are the major ones who really quote him. I saw one from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. It's a remarkable reach. What I did not see was him being quoted by name in Mesilas Yesharim, which I find interesting.